What people are looking for are experiences which other people can't get. Because by definition, if everyone else can get it, then it ain't special. And I'm in love with the good life. Can't give it
up. Make it to the top. Keep climbing. Welcome to the Easemakers podcast, presented by Nines, for people who are passionate about the art of private service. Every estate manager has a story, and this is where you get to hear them. On this show, you'll learn from the best in the business, get tips and inspiration to fuel your career, and connect with people who get it. Subscribe now and join the conversation at easemakers.com. I'm Kristen Twyford, and on the show today, Mohammed Elzamor and I are talking with Ray Flemings, co-founder and CEO of Myria, a private marketplace that offers goods, services, and experiences you can't Google. In this conversation, Ray shares what he's learned about off-market experiences and what principals really want. It's a topic he's passionate about after building two concierge businesses and spending years in family offices.
I came into the industry both times by accident. The first time I came into service, I was the commissioner of music. Mohammed and I had just been talking about this old position, and I happened to be working with some of the biggest recording artists in the world, and had an opportunity to start working in the family office of this giant celebrity. And it happened by accident. The second time I got dragged into the service industry, I was I'm a technologist by background, and I've built multiple startups. So I was building a mobile video application. You know, I had dreams of building the next TikTok, and I got a call from a friend who had sold his company, and they had some problems. He asked me for some help, and I did it as a favor so that I could show him my mobile video application. I'm like, okay, I'll provide these services to you. I'll show you my application. He'll be an investor. And I wasn't thinking about service as a career or as a business. By the end of helping with that, more people had asked for help, and more people had asked for help. And they were like, oh, I didn't know you would do this. And one thing led to another. And like 6 months later, I was like, I guess I'm doing this as a business, because I just kept getting all of these requests over and over again. So I kind of got drugged into the business, if that makes sense.
It absolutely does. Well, we're going to talk a lot more about your story and how you got to where you are now. But we want to start with a quick lightning round of fun questions to help people get to know you. So the first one is, who's your favorite fictional private service professional? Do you have a favorite?
Fictional private service professional. You know, I consider the Quartermasters, Q and James Bond, service industry, even though they were kind of gadget forward and making things. I like that idea. I also like the idea of the person who's in the ear of the special agent in all the films, right? So they're out there doing special agent stuff, but there's this person, the almost the voice of God, who's in their earpiece, who's helping them out, who's their eyes, who's their ears. And so, you know, somewhere between those two types of characters would be my personal favorite. And it's kind of in keeping with the way you even see little elements of that in our business and the way that we provide our services.
Absolutely. I feel like that's fitting.
Yeah, that's a really good answer. What's on your daily soundtrack?
Well,
for the commissioner of music.
Yeah,
of course,
no, listen, fortunately or unfortunately, I lost 100 pounds in about 4 months. And, people are always like, how did you lose that weight? Did you get the gastric bypass? What did you take? And I'm like, you know, it turns out that diet and exercise still work. And, doing that much work for a person who had never, like, I'd never run a 5K in my life. I've run hundreds of them now. I needed music. I've had a lifetime habit of listening to the same songs over and over again. And so, I listened to this old Black Crowes song to start my crazy 5K runs every single morning for like a year now. It drives me crazy now that I'm listening to the same song, but I have like the pace and the rhythm down to it. And so I listen to this same song every single day of my life to start these runs, which is kind of annoying and kind of crazy sounding actually. But yeah, it works for me, so.
I love it. What's the song?
It is My Morning Song, fittingly enough, by the Black Crowes.
How fitting indeed. Love it. I'm going to start my morning to that tomorrow. I want to hear it.
The trick is the song is about 152 beats a minute, which is incidentally the pace that I want to run at. And so because the song's pace is right there at the rhythm, it just works for me. Anyway.
Just sets you off right. I love it. What's one thing that surprised you when you first got into this industry?
It surprised me. Well, there's so many surprises about this industry. One, luxury service and dealing with the richest people in the world, the entire universe is inverted. Nothing behaves the way that you think it behaves. So everything in, quote unquote, the normal world is subject to the law of demand. As the price goes up, demand for the thing goes down. And because we understand that that's the way pricing and all of these things work, we've developed our intuition, we've developed our gut around it. But at the top of the top of the top, dealing with the absolute wealthiest people in the world, the goods and services are not subject to the law of demand. They are what's called Veblen goods. And they actually, you know, if a demand curve looks like this, you know, as price rises, demand sinks, a Veblen curve looks like that, right? It's the exact polar opposite. And so figuring out what that means when what used to be up is down and what used to be down is now up, right? It's like this inverted kind of crazy world of like, now what? You know, that was one of the more interesting subtleties to understand. And then I think the other one is, you know, a lot of service people treat rich people like characters that they see on their television and forget that they're human beings. And probably those two observations have been, you know, the most fascinating thing. Like we have this, how should you talk to a rich person? Oh, madame, oh, sir, and da 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 da. And most really successful people I know don't want all of that stuff at all. They're humans trying to lead their lives and want to be treated warmly, et cetera, et cetera.
What's a story you love to tell from your time in private service?
Well, following on the previous question of not treating people like people, we had a client. They had purchased one of the most expensive homes in the world. Home was so large, it had a full-time staff of 55 people working in it, a single-family home. There are hotels that don't have full-time staff, 55 people. And there's a ruckus. I don't know what's going on. I'm doing something else. And I get, you know, essentially called into the kitchen. I'm like, what's going on? And the staff is freaking out. Madame wants pancakes. Madame wants pancakes. Madame wants pancakes. Madame wants pancakes. I'm like, we'll just give her some pancakes. They're like, we're out of pancake mix. There are 15 adults, nannies, butlers, chef, yard people, all in the kitchen freaking out, screaming, Madame wants pancakes. And I'm like, well, why don't you just go get some pancake mix? And they're like, you don't understand. Madame requires special pancake mix with these 27 ingredients, whatever, you know, these ingredients were. And I'm like, so just tell her you're out. And they're like, oh, we can't tell Madame that we're out of pancake mix. And I pick up the phone and I say to Madame, to the client, I'm like, hey, this is right. There's no pancake mix. She says, just make me some eggs and tell them to stop calling me Madame. Right? Like, who wants, you know, like all of this was literally made up in these people's heads. This woman doesn't want to be called Madame. She's like 35. And she was just, hey, we're out of pancake mix. Make me some eggs. But everyone was in this, like driving themselves crazy because Madame wanted pancakes.
That is so funny. And I think a very good springboard into our conversation about what principles really want and the types of experiences that you've noticed are really popular now. So before we get into sort of that heart of our conversation, I want to back it up a little bit and talk about your story and sort of what led you to where you are today, because you've been doing this a long time. So tell us a little bit about your background and your experiences so far in the private service industry.
Sure. I grew up about as far from the world of private service as one could. I grew up with a poor but very loving family in North Memphis, Tennessee. And until probably fourth grade, you know, the world was maybe 10 blocks, maybe. You know, I can remember looking out my backyard and there was like a creek that ran between our neighborhood from another and thinking, wow, you know, it might as well have been China, you know, that I was looking at across the field. My journey into private service, I've spent about 15 years in the business. So I turned 50 this summer, old enough to have led two careers. About two thirds of my career has been in early stage technology, where I've been a repeat founder. Sorry, I can't talk today. And one third in kind of the family office and private service space. Family office world was super interesting because I came into it working with global celebrities, people who were not only incredibly wealthy, but also some of the most famous faces on the planet. That's a really interesting experience to have, you know, because I've discovered that rich people want to be cool and cool people want to be rich. And there are some, you know, people who are incredibly rich and incredibly cool, and those have really, really high quality lives. And so one of the ideas that I took forward was, how do we help enhance the quality of life for people who are really, really successful but may not have the access of global celebrities? And so the services that I started providing had a lot to do with the non-financial side of life. And the thesis that I've been taking forward really is that super successful people, the wealth is generally well handled. Sure, they might need some new staff, or they might want to change family offices, but they've already made more money likely than they ever dreamed of making. They're, you know, one of the, by definition, the wealthiest people on earth. The question then becomes, what are they doing with their success, and are they happy? And, you know, rich people get sad and depressed and commit suicide just like poor people. And in fact, I would argue that all of the complexity that comes with the wealth can actually lead people, if they're not very careful, to being unhappy, still worth hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, and not leading happy and fulfilled lives. And so that's kind of how I came into the business, and happy to answer any other questions.
Sure. And I think that's such an interesting point, too, because I think there's an expectation when you have wealth that your life is going to get better. And I think that letdown is really painful of, oh, you thought things were going to be easy now, and maybe they're not.
This is a classic problem, right? And we hear it all of the time. When we begin working with clients, we do something that we call blueprinting, which is a life strategic plan. And so I've sat down over the years, I don't know, with nearing 100 of the world's billionaires and put them through this process. And invariably, this question or this statement that you just brought up, hey, I made it. And I thought, you know, because everyone had told me, oh, well, the goal of life is financial success. And here I am, I've made all the money and I'm not happy. And it's not, you know, wait, wait, now what? You know, this sort of a reaction. And I hear it all the time, right? I don't have the data from our surveys, but I would say I hear that in probably one half to two thirds.
Thinking about that, I think on the other side of this coin are private service professionals and estate managers who really are striving to make life easier for their principals. What have you learned, you know, either as a private service professional or where you are now, that you would want to share with estate managers who want to create really good experiences for their principals?
For an estate manager who's focused on the experiences of their principals, I would advise, you know, definitely taking the team approach. The thesis of my business is that off-market access is difficult. There's a lot of stuff that you simply cannot Google. A great service professional will have a great network, and they'll have access to some wonderful things. But no person, including myself or my company, has access to everything, right? And so building a network of resources so that you can find and kind of access the things that your client wants. Also, don't be afraid to be a source of inspiration. We hear all the time from our clients that people don't know what to do. They don't know what's on the menu. They don't know what's possible. And so if a friend doesn't tell them about it, or they don't see it in a magazine or hear it on the internet, they just don't know. And so I would encourage service professionals to think about their relationship with their principal like a journey. And over the stretch of their time of service or the stretch of their career, they want to have, you know, walk the principal through a number of experiences in line with where they want to go. If that's kind of beyond the reach for a service professional, services like ours are designed to help do that. That's kind of what we do professionally in support of an existing team.
For a personal assistant or house manager or estate manager that perhaps they're somewhat new to the industry and they haven't had a really long time to build that network, how do they go about starting something like that?
Yeah, so there are some really wonderful organizations out there that are professional, essentially organizations for people who are in private service. I advise to join them. Those professional organizations are really indispensable, right? And then it's all about experience, right? It's all about just getting in there, building your network, being nice, being easy to work with, go to the events. You know, thankfully, the family office world is also fairly well, I don't want to say connected, because in a sense it's opaque, but there's a ton of events and learnings and professional organizations and all sorts of things that are going on throughout the calendar year long. And so I would say, hey, if I was coming in to a new client and I was young, I might even say to the principal, hey, would you send me to this conference, because I want to get better. I want to learn more. I want to be able to provide better service to you. And most people as principals who are worth their salt would want to develop their people to be able to provide them with better service. So I don't even think it's something that has to come out of the kind of new service professionals' pocket. I think they can actually ask their principal for it.
One of the things that you mentioned is that part of Myria's, you know, hypothesis is that, you know, the best experiences are off market. They're not things that you can Google. And I think every private service professional has had that moment where they're kind of tasked with something impossible, something that sounds crazy, or how do I even go about that? Can you think of some times in your own private service career where that happened to you that kind of led you to this hypothesis? Can you think of any stories that you would want to share with other private service professionals?
You know, I mean, countless, right? I mean, yeah. This is my full-time business now for the past 7 years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we hear and have seen, you know, more stuff than we have time to recount here. But, you know, one of the crazier ones, we had a client ask for armed private security while on vacation in the Mediterranean. The country that they wanted to visit has a federal law which prohibits armed private security. The only people that can carry weapons in that country are police and on-duty military. Both have to be on duty. The exception for that are, there's a diplomatic exception. And so we got the president of the country to treat our private American citizen as a diplomat. And he even gave a member of the presidential security detail to guard our client on vacation in the Mediterranean. Getting that done was one of the more difficult things that we've ever been asked to accomplish or kind of pulled off for a client. But there's even crazier stuff than that. But yeah, I mean, we get asked for insane stuff all the time.
What kind of traits or mindset does it require to take on these types of requests and actually pull them off?
The mindset is, first, everything in the world is gated by a human being. Everything. There is a person, someone, who's like, they've got their hand on the gate and they can be like, yes or no, right? Like, pick the thing, anything you can think of, there's a human with their hand on the gate, like, right? And you remember the old 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, right? This idea that no matter who you can think of in the history of Hollywood, there are no more than 6 hops from Kevin Bacon, right? They've all like worked with Kevin, did it up through this whole thing. Well, that is an early concept, kind of predating Facebook, of a social graph, right? When you talk about social networks, that's all that is. That like this person, which they call a node, can know that person and go that person. If you hop 6 times, you could get from Ray to Vladimir Putin, or from, you know, that you're no more than 6 degrees of separation from all the people on Earth. And so the first part of the mindset is that, A, it's gated by a human. You're no more than 6 degrees from it. We pride ourselves on being no more than 2 phone calls from anyone on Earth. Because we know what's called in graph sciences, central nodes or eigenvectors. These are super connectors in all the industries that count, in all the geographies that count, et cetera, et cetera. You know, my first call, if I don't know, is to a super connector in that field who should know. And as long as we keep long, solid, amazing relationships with that person, they're generous with their Rolodex. And if they don't know, but again, they've narrowed it down. So I need something in Saudi, right? So I call the senior most person I know in Saudi. And it's like, hey, I've got, this is the profile of the client. They're looking for this. And he's going to know, right? Like, he's going to be like, well, here's how you pick up the phone and get that done. So that's the way to think about solving, you know, these impossible problems. We're able to do a lot of it because I built this a crazy network over, you know, more than 3 decades of working in this area.
And so now that you're doing this work and you've been doing this for 7 years plus, you know, really focusing on these experiences that are sort of what principals really want, these off-market experiences, what patterns have you seen? What have you heard from principals about what they really want? You know, what are some of the things that come up over and over again?
Yeah, I mean, at the heart of it, human beings want to feel special, all of us. And so experiences is greater than half of our business. And what people are looking for are experiences which other people can't get. Because by definition, if everyone else can get it, then it ain't special, right? And so, you know, if the three of us went to Universal Studios tonight or today, and we all bought fast passes, if everyone had a fast pass, does anybody have a fast pass? If everyone has a fast pass, nobody's got a fast pass, right? And so, you know, VIP and all of these special things have just been degraded, right, down to just to being as common as anything else. And so the 300,000 wealthiest people in the world, who are likely your principals, ultra high net worth individuals, those 300,000 people spend almost $400 billion per year on lifestyle and recreation. Let me state that a different way. 19% of all global luxury spending comes from just 300,000 people. Now, the press talks about the 1%. This ain't the 1%. 300,000 people out of 8 billion is 0.003%, right? It's a really, really, really tiny number. It's not the 1%. And so they want to feel special. The internet has commoditized nearly everything, right? Get thousands of restaurant reservations, go find millions of homes on Airbnb, go buy all the sports tickets at StubHub, what have you. But past a certain point, all of those things that are commoditized lose their appeal for the most successful people in the world. They're looking for, okay, what's next? Because again, they want to feel special. And so that's at the heart of it. How do we create? And no matter what their area of interest or passion, it could be art, it could be sports, it could be film, it could be educational, it could be philanthropic, so forth and so on. When people are making these massive contributions or spending, you know, significant sums, it's human nature to want to feel special for their contribution. They don't want to feel also ran. They don't want to feel, you know, ho-hum just like anyone else. And so that's what is driving it at its heart, I believe.
I guess speaking of those patterns and, you know, the what's next, that really cool thing that no one else can have you seen trends? Are there any specific experiences that you're seeing that people are asking for over and over?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, it's funny. We're moving away from conspicuous consumption, at least among my client base, right? There is a difference between a person who finally has enough money to buy a Ferrari and a person who has enough money to buy Ferrari, the corporation. The guy who finally has enough money to buy a Ferrari is probably driving one. He might be driving two and trading up for a Lamborghini and da 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 da. The person with the money to buy Ferrari, the corporation, may not own a Ferrari at all, right? They might be in an Uber. They're just like chilling. It's like a completely different thing. So trends, human connection, less stuff, less brand. Like at the top of the market, it contradicts everything that you see in the general luxury market. So if the general luxury market is more conspicuous and more ostentatious and more luxury logo-y and more shiny than ever. If that's the general luxury market, I would tell you that at the ultra high net worth rung, centimillionaires and up, is kind of the opposite of that. Because again, everybody wants to feel cool. Everybody wants to feel special. And so if everybody's zigging, they're gonna zag. And as soon as everyone starts zagging, they're gonna zig, right? So whatever you're seeing in the rap music videos is in part wanting to be emulated by the world's richest because they think it's cool, but they also want to contradict it. And so there's this really interesting thing where people want the experiences, want to know their music heroes, but they're kind of, they're living lives in very different ways. So the trend is towards experience, human connection. We're seeing a lot more experiential philanthropy, people who want to enjoy the giving away of money. You did not ask this question, but I'll give you my thoughts on it. Look, from a philanthropic perspective, anonymous giving and anonymous donors, these are the best of us. These are people who have really, really great personal motivations. They're like, hey, I want to put my dollars to work. It's not about my ego. And that's awesome. But anonymous philanthropy is not as helpful as, let's call it, acknowledged philanthropy. Because when you're anonymous, people can't hear your story. You don't get to inspire anyone. And the problems of humanity are compounding quickly. We need examples as to, hey, this guy built a successful company and started doing these things philanthropically. We need to inspire around that more quickly. And so, yeah, that's my answer there.
Yeah, I feel like I could talk about that point all day, which is maybe a whole other podcast of, you know, I think it's interesting, you know, what you just mentioned is that inspiration piece and that, you know, you can have such a ripple effect by inspiring other people to be like you. But I also want to kind of dig into another point that I feel like is relevant here around kindness. And I know that kindness is a core value at Myria. And a lot of our private service professionals that we work with in the Easemakers community are so passionate about this work that they do. And everybody's looking for a long-term match with a principal who is really respectful and kind, because then they can do their best work and, you know, serve the principal to the best of their ability. And they feel like they're serving someone who really they're allowing them to do incredible work like the philanthropy you just mentioned, or, you know, whatever it is that they're doing professionally. So why was it so important for you to have kindness as a core value? And what would you say to a private service professional who really wants to grow their career alongside a principal who is that kind, you know, respectful person? How do you find that person and how do you stand out to get that job?
We're all human beings, right? And the kindness piece makes the world go around. Service is hard. Invariably, in human-powered services, something is going to go wrong. It doesn't matter how good you are. It doesn't matter how hard you work. It doesn't matter how earnest you are. We are all humans. At some point, something is going to happen outside of your control, and you're going to also make a mistake. Something's going to happen within your control, right? That's written in the cards. Now, that's true for the service professional. That's true for the principal. The question is, how do we treat one another when that happens? Can we own it? Can we be polite? Can we be respectful? Can we learn from it? Can we move on in an easy and a gentle way? It was important for me. In my experience, I've had to fire about one client per year. People who did not understand that we are all human beings. I put my pants on the same way as a billionaire every single morning. I have kids and family and responsibilities and pressure. And sure, we make a lot of money together, but there is no amount of money. My respect is not for sale. My integrity is not for sale. And so, you know, we've had some, about one a year where we've had to let go of. So when we founded Myria, we wanted to build a system that encouraged and rewarded good behavior and kind people, and also had the opposite effect. So you asked, how would you find someone? I think references are important both ways. Private service, yes, everyone wants privacy. But in the hiring process, both parties have to be willing to agree to be referenced. Because at the end of the day, if everyone walks around, I worked for the richest guy in the world, one of them, and he's under NDA and I can't tell you anything about it, that doesn't work. And if, oh, I've had 55 full-time employees, but you can't speak to any of them about working here, you know, then it's all just a shell game. You know, and so good, honest people should be willing to be referenced, because it's all about fit. The principal, don't be afraid to ask. The principal wants a good fit. They want the relationship to work. It does not behoove a really rich person who's probably super busy, time constrained, to keep hiring, to keep looking. They'd love to have a good fit also. But you've got to understand, person who, most of my clients are first generation. If you're first generation, you work for a living. You might be fantastically wealthy, but you're running a company, right? And so running a company in these seats is not a 40-hour week job. It's like a 60, 80-hour week thing. Managing their wealth is their part-time job, their family office, et cetera. This is some other number of hours. So when they get to their living room, when they're finally home, they don't want to run an HR department from their breakfast table to manage all their household employees either. I mean, it's a complete nightmare, right? And so they want to hire well, and they want to keep it light, and they want to be humans. They want to have a personal life in their personal space. And so I would recommend that the private service people keep all of those factors in mind. They should be willing to, you know, offer up their references, speak with previous employers. They should ask their principal for the same. Hey, let me speak to someone who else was in this role. I'd like to know post-mortem what went wrong, what you'd like to do better, so forth and so on. And don't be afraid to leave a bad situation, right? When there are people who are abusive, there are people who are just frankly not good eggs, there's other great people in the world. And give them the feedback by leaving, by quitting, and go find someone who will treat you right.
Speaking of kindness and how you were able to build that into your system in Myria, what does that look like? How do you encourage that and how do you reward that?
That's a great question. Thank you. So the Myria community, first of all, is gated for everyone to join it. And we would encourage any of your professional services people that would like to become service providers, please fill out applications. We love having amazing people on platform. But everyone undergoes, so our members undergo a KYC and kind of all of these kind of professional vetting, if you will. All of the service providers undergo a similar experience on the other side. Then we interview the parties to make sure there's a personality fit. So that's what happens. That's the gating to get into the community, to start using the service. Once they're on the platform and are using it, every special access thing that a member buys from a provider, at the end of the experience, there is an Uber style rating, a 0 to 10 score, 10 being highest. 0 means you're done. So if we, there's an article, if we did a special favor where, I don't know, we did some special experience for a person, we got you, you know, field passes to the Super Bowl or whatever it is. If you went down there and for whatever reason, caused a problem on the sideline, acted like a jerk, weren't doing where you were supposed to be, interrupted the game, any of those things. If you were rated a 0 at that experience, then you could never purchase another NFL experience. That stadium would blacklist you, et cetera, right? And so everyone on the platform understands that 0 means you're done. And it just encourages people to remain on their best behavior. It ties behavior to reputation, right? So we're responsible for how we act and how we treat people. And when people are doing favors and you have access to things that you don't otherwise have access to, you know, imagine there's a restaurant there. You go on Open Table, you can book almost any restaurant on earth, but you can't book the best restaurants, right? You can't book Nobu Malibu. You can't book the French Laundry. You can't book Carbone New York. You can't book the best restaurants on earth. So client asks us, we get them this amazing booking. And then the principal shows up to the restaurant 50 minutes late, no call, no show, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that booking was a favor, right? Because they have a 1-year wait list and you didn't want to wait and we moved you to the front of the line and then you showed up 50 minutes late. That's how a person earns a 0 on the platform. And if you earn several of those, then we can't put our reputation in front of a person that does that.
Well, Ray, thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. Any final words of wisdom or pieces of advice that you would share with estate managers or private service professionals?
The robots are coming, but they're not coming for service. We're going to continue to need to provide humans. We'll continue to need human-powered services. I believe that private service is a great career and a wonderful opportunity. that needs more good people. I am long-term bullish on the private service category in the face of all the AI, in the face of all these other things. Humans are still going to need human beings to help one another. And I think that's as it should be. And so I think, you know, for anyone who's out there in the field, stay encouraged. Obviously, it can be difficult at times. We've talked about some of those difficulties. But I think that the people are probably, if they're in private service, they're in the right place, and stay confident and keep a smile on your face.
Thank you to Ray Flemings for joining us today. Learn more about Myria at myria.us. If you enjoyed our conversation and want to hear more from experts in the private service industry, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. Tell us about your favorite episodes and let us know what you want to learn next.
To connect with other estate managers on a regular basis, join the conversation in the EaseMakers community.
The EaseMakers podcast and the EaseMakers community are presented by Nines, the first dynamic household management platform built for discerning households and the private service professionals who support them. Visit ninesliving.com to see how Nines can help you bring your house manual to life so you can live with ease.
I'm Mohammed Elzamore.
And I'm Kristen Twyford.
And we'll see you next time on the EaseMakers podcast.